far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode, it's going to be our Thanksgiving special. Already got the recording started.
Okay,
we
cool.
Can just hop right into this. So are we gonna call this episode our Thanksgiving week or Thanks Game Giving or Thanks Gaming or I don't know. I'm so bad with names.
Something like that.
Thanks Gaming. There we go.
Sure.
God, I'm stupid. Alright, this is the Anime of Yesteryear podcast. I am your host, Dustin. With me is John.
Yes, I'm here.
And then we also got a special guest on, Josh.
Hello.
Or the V-mon Josh. And we haven't done a video game podcast in years, where we just sat down and talked about video games, and I figured it'd be a good Thanksgiving special, which means
yes.
I can put this out by Thanksgiving, when that's in like 2 days or something. 3 days? I don't know. But, whatevs. You guys, yeah, so, what are our topics? It's going to be like, what, the Nintendo Switch? And that's it?
yeah, I mean, that came out this year, and I just got one a few weeks ago.
The only good thing in video games this year.
They've got only a few games for it so far, but I mean, they are pretty major games that have been in development for a long time. The new Zelda and Mario games, and
they're so big that
there's a lot to talk about.
See, I actually have a list of what exclusive games they've had for the Switch.
Okay,
so far.
Well, do you want to talk about Sonic?
How many are there? Like 20 or
something around there? Yeah.
Josh, are you going to talk about the new Sonic 2 that just came out?
Yeah. Yeah, might as well.
Yeah, I haven't played that one yet, but it's worth seeing what you think about that and, you know, both of the Sonics for the Switch, because it seemed like Sonic Mania was really well-received, but then not so much Sonic Forces.
I mean, the only thing I could really talk about is, like, Gundam Versus and just some other stuff I've picked up since I got, like, a PlayStation 4 and then a Vita over the summer. So, I'm kind of looking at my... I'm looking to the right of me at my computer desk, and I've got my PS4... my PlayStation Vita and PS4 games. And a lot of these come from my friend's company, Limited Run, because he gave me a bunch of stuff that were, like... I guess games that were shipped back that people thought were damaged or something, but they still work. So, like, they've just been sitting on a shelf for 6 months, and whenever I get around to playing them, so...
Oh. Bunch of damaged games, but not so damaged that
they won't play?
No,
it's the fact that, like, okay, I'm holding up one. It's a PC game by Suda51. It's called Silver Case, and he just gave this to me because there's a post-it note on here that says... this is the box. It's a collector's edition. It says, arrived damaged in shipping. Exchange needed. Thank you. And he wrote down this person's name, order number, ticket number, whatever. And this content inside is perfectly fine. It's just the box is kind of damaged. So, like, that's been sitting on a shelf for a while because I just blew off a bunch of dust. So, no, yeah, I got a bunch of stuff to play, and I can check my freaking Steam account because I kind of play that. But I don't know. I mean, like your thing was like you guys want to talk about the Nintendo Switch, and right. I've only seen it like played once. I was at a cookout like a few weeks ago, and there was like another youth group there, and there was like this girl that was there playing her like a Nintendo Switch. And I was like coming over like, hey, is that a, you know, Nintendo Switch? And she's like, yeah. And I was like, you mind if I just watch you play it? I'm just kind of curious about it. So we were kind of like talking about the system or whatever, and it just seemed interesting.
Yeah. So did she have the Mario edition or like the regular Switch?
I think it was a regular Switch as far as I can tell. She was just playing like the new Mario Kart game on it.
Okay.
And
yeah, because they did re-release Mario Kart and a bunch of other Wii U games, I guess the idea is that they had so few sales on the Wii U that they don't want people to miss out on those games, and they'll seem new to a lot of people, even if they're not actually new games.
Wait, so the Mario Kart game that's on the Switch is like off of another game that already exists, correct?
It's just the Wii U game again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the Wii U game with all the DLC included.
Does it play any differently? Did they improve things from the Wii U game, or?
I doubt it.
I don't think so. I think it's largely played the same way.
They just have to have something Mario Kart related to get on the Switch, then.
They just had so few games that they had to release it again.
Well, actually, the Switch version does have like better like multiplayer arenas, because I don't think the Wii U had arenas. Like the older games did.
That must have been something that they got a lot of criticism over, so they had to include that as a new mode.
I'll be honest, the last Mario Kart game I remember playing, the latest newer one, was probably like Mario Kart DS. And that game's, what, 11 years old at this point?
Yeah, the Wii U version of Mario Kart 8, all the multiplayer was basically in the normal tracks, whereas the deluxe version has like multiplayer exclusive maps.
Hmm.
Oh,
well, it's nice that they at least added something for it, but I can't really like recommend that people play the same game again unless they really play it a lot online. I mean, I guess Mario Kart is meant to be played online these days mainly.
I can also, and speaking of Nintendo products, I can talk about the Super Nintendo Classic that I picked up. Yeah, that was like
in September. That's right.
Yeah. It's been sitting in a box for about a month, actually, because my family and I took it on a trip back in October to Asheville. My brother and I played it for a little bit, and we brought a projector with us to play it on, and then we played it for a little bit, and since we've been back on a trip, it's just been sitting in the corner of my room because I've been busy with other things.
Well, you have anything to say about, like, Star Fox, or...
I could talk about Star Fox, too. I guess I can give a solid review of that is a legitimatized copy that we got in the States that you had to buy a console for.
Right. They released it in, like, the most bizarre way. I mean, that's the game that they've been sitting on for...
20 years.
Over 20 years. Yeah. since, like, five generations of video game consoles ago. And, they didn't put it on Virtual Console or something where everybody could get it. Instead, they put it on this system that nobody's going to be able to track down. I mean, you got it. But you're lucky. But, this is not something that more than like a few thousand people are going to end up having.
I think the thing is, like, I'm wondering if, like, because it's on the Super Nintendo Classic, will they release it, like, on the Virtual Console, like, sometime next year?
Maybe after the Super Nintendo Classic goes out of print and they no longer have that as like...
It's supposed to be in print until the end of next month is what they claimed. So you're supposed to have like a 3-month period where you can get these systems, but again, like with the demand being so high, like, and this is Nintendo, because they love doing that. Like it's only like the few people that are gonna get it if they get lucky. But then I hear like some stories of people like, oh, I walked into Target the other day and they had like two or three Super Nintendo Classics just sitting there. So, either people didn't know about it at that point, or like, they may leak some in and then leave them out until someone notices. But now that it's like, you know, Black Friday coming up this week and Christmas, like, I'm pretty sure, like, you will not see those in stores.
Yeah, well, it'd be nice if they could keep it stocked, but it's Nintendo, so, yeah.
It's Nintendo, there you go. And then they're gonna be like, a year from now, like, oh, look, we didn't discover this other part of the warehouse. We found some more systems and they're gonna be $300. F you!
They did keep the NES Classic coming out longer than they originally said they would, I think. But
then they marked up the price to, like, how the rest of the scalpers, like, were selling their stuff, or, like, a little bit lower to be competitive. Or some bull crap, I don't know.
It seems Nintendo is usually pretty good about not messing with the price too much, but in this specific case, I wasn't really following it that closely.
It was, I think I remember it was, like, what was it, AmiAmi or one of the other import sites was like, hey, we found a bunch of them and here they are for like $400.
Well, I'm pretty sure
I don't think it was Nintendo. I think it was one of the distributors did it.
Oh, I remember this. Okay. Viku was complaining about it because they said like that you have to buy a bunch of add-ons or something. And they hey, we've discovered these, and you have to buy all this stuff too. And it, if you want to buy,
oh yeah, I remember that.
yeah, it's just some sort of racket that they're.
Oh,
I don't know if they kept all them on purpose or they legitimately just found them. But I mean, it's hard to believe when they say that kind of stuff.
Well, speaking of rackets, EA was trying to pull something on like that with the loot crate thing system that they had for Battlefront 2 that everyone freaking hated. And they got crap for it for days or years.
Is this the thing where somebody was upset about like Star Wars DLC or something?
Yes.
I don't know the details of that controversy, but I saw a cloud link to some like butthurt posts on Reddit.
It's the fact that like you have to pay like a large amount of money just to unlock Darth Vader, because it's not only like getting Darth Vader as a DLC character, you know, in a game that Darth Vader is such a notable character, it's the fact that it goes on a lottery system, like the loot crate from Overwatch, where it's randomized if you're going to get it or not. So people were like, you mean it's going to take me $90 to get Darth Vader? And that's just a figure of speech is the way I understood it.
Wait, you pay $90 and then you're not even guaranteed to get it?
Well, you can probably pay up to $90 to try to win Darth Vader in like a randomized like slot or something. Because that's how the loot crate system is set up on
like
that
game. Like video game lottery
DLC? That's what a lot of criticism was coming from on that, yeah. That was the way
This is why I don't usually do the DLC.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something that I feel like it's nice if they do it for free or something. Like Nintendo sometimes has free DLC on games even. Like they had on Animal Crossing New Leaf, they did a big update on it. That they charge people $20 for if you buy it new, or if you already have the game, then they, you know, they just give it to you for free. And that's nice, but, you know, I mean, there are so many cases where DLC is just, it's not like a thanks for buying our game and sticking with it for so long, you know, it's like, no, we're just gonna gut the game of basic features and then force you to pay a bunch of extra money for it.
Yeah, or... Oh, hey, we made 70% of a game. You can unlock the last 30% of it within the $300. Or something ridiculous like that, yeah.
And they've started to include a DLC now in more and more games in Nintendo.
Yeah, because that's their cash cow.
Breath of the Wild, which we're going to talk about, I'm sure, has DLC. Okay. And I haven't bought any of it yet.
I got a feeling this is going to be the podcast for F video games. Why do we even play them? It's all just a big scam.
Okay.
All right.
So I just
moved from complaining about anime to complaining about video games for a week.
Okay, so I just looked up how much the loot boxes, I mean, like, how much you'd have to spend or play to get all the Star Wars Battlefront 2 content.
Content and characters and all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so, okay, it takes up to 40 hours to unlock Darth Vader, but to get, like, everything, you either have to play over 4,500 hours or spend over $2,100.
Oh, great.
That's EA!
So pick your poison.
So, how many characters would that be? Like, how many can you unlock by playing for that long or buying that many?
I don't know. If I'm gonna play Battlefront 2, it'll probably just be for the campaign because I don't want to put up with like, annoying 13-year-olds that know every swear word because I'm multiplayer. So that's just that ain't my jam. I already put up with that in Day of Infamy. So yeah, whatever. I guess this is like an estimated math that people on Reddit figured out, right?
Yeah, it was like, I see Rolling Stone posted 4,528 hours to unlock all the content.
Oh, this is on their website, I would assume, yeah. Huh.
It seems like a total ripoff, but I mean, I guess whatever works for them. I mean, Star Wars, it's not like people don't know what they're getting in for now. It's a completely corporate commercialized franchise, even more than it was when George Lucas was in control. You know, it's just a complete money grab now. And they're not exactly shy about that. They're
waiting. Oh, yeah. You've seen all the porks, right?
Oh, yeah. That's the new mascot, huh?
Yeah. That's the new Ewok, the new Jar Jar, you know, whatever. The new BB-8. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's some, like, cute creature that they're going to make millions of dollars off of at Disney, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Selling stuffed animals for Christmas and everything.
Hey, remind me, when we get to closing remarks, I can talk about that con I went to over the weekend.
Okay.
Which won't take me long, but
so that I'm sure that'll make millions of dollars for them just through porgs alone. I mean that it's just kids probably eat up all this stuff. It seemed like the BB-8 toys were hugely profitable last Christmas.
I was seeing porg toys as early as July, so
they made them that early.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's amazing how, like, kids that are getting into Star Wars is like how I was getting into Star Wars 20 years ago. And, I mean, part of me is like, alright, you know, these franchises are just it's just a big money cash grab joke. It's just gonna be, like, bland stuff. And it's written to, like, empower female characters and make guys look like completely idiots or whatever, but...
Yeah.
I mean, at the same time, like, I want some good stuff to come out of it. Like, okay, what if we get, like, a Shadows of the Empire, like, movie? And when I say a movie, I mean like a fan film, kind of like Rogue One, because I consider Rogue One a fan film, and I stand by
that.
They're
all fan films now.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, because they're doing their own thing. If it's not from the original creator, then like you know, it's I guess that's one argument you can make. But yeah, I mean, like after they do Episode 9, like you know, they're going to keep milking it for whatever they can. So then you got to wonder, like, okay, they're going to adapt those Star Wars novels that were written over 30 years that had like Luke having a daughter that was a Jedi or whatever. And
that,
or
wasn't that what they're already doing?
I don't know what's in the new movies, so we'll find out. But
like, well, I mean, that's like what Rey is, except maybe she's not technically his daughter, or maybe she is, but like they haven't revealed who her parents are yet.
Oh, I have no idea. But my thing is like, hey, maybe like a good thing come out of like where they make like a pretty good like Shadows of the Empire movie, or
I'm not saying the like, stuff I'd they put out that. Is not good. It's just that it's all just pandering to pre-existing expectations and fans, and that's all that the franchise has turned into, basically, is just...
I know.
It kind of sad, but I mean, it was 100% predictable as soon as Disney bought it that it would turn out this way.
Yeah.
Because this is what Disney does.
I mean, do you want to hold your comments until a month from later, a month from now when we do our Christmas special where we talk about Episode 8? Because I'm pretty sure we're just going to get right back into the discussion, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say Episode 8 is going to be a bad movie or something.
No, it's not going to be a bad movie at all, but I mean, like, to me, I have my predisposition of, like, I tell people, like, it looks like an Empire Strikes Back, and they're like, oh no, it's totally, like, not going to be that. Like, they're doing little things different. I'm like, the whole premise looks like a freaking like ripoff of Empire Strikes Back. 2.
Of course
0.
It is, and it's just now Lucas Yoda, you know, and people make fun of George Lucas for saying like, "Oh, it's poetry; everything repeats." Well, I mean, look at what they're doing now. They're repeating just as much as he did.
He can't use that theology now because it's someone else writing his characters in his universe now. Like he has no control over it. So, like, whatever.
but they're just doing, like, I mean, you can say that the prequels are in a way like clones of the original, but they're so radically different in so many different ways, whereas, like, they wouldn't have the guts to do something and then fall on their face now. They're everything they do is going to be 100% calculated to be as economically productive for Disney as possible.
Yeah.
They're not going to take any risks.
Nope.
They're going to play it safe, and they're going to do exactly what they did with the original trilogy. And it's going to work for them because it has for the last couple movies. And I mean, at least Rogue One is like tonally very different from the others, but at the same time, it's like they're using the same monsters and robots and whatnot to, you know. Well, anyway, I'm sure we'll talk about Star Wars a lot more.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for that for you to run out of steam there, so we can talk about Vidya games. So.
Right.
All right, so Nintendo Switch, tell me about it. Sell me, both of you.
It's kind of hard for me to outright say that people should buy it this early on, because I did buy it a couple weeks ago, but so far I only have Mario, which it's a great game and all, but I mean, I beat the main part of the game and in a weekend, and then after that it's like exploring the worlds to get more power moons. And I'm sure that'll take a long time to get all of them. I probably never will, because I never got all the stars in 64 or Sunshine. Because some of them, you know, they're well hidden or take a lot of skill to get or whatnot. And there's supposed to be 1,000 power moons hidden all throughout the worlds in Mario, and I only have about 400 right now.
It's interesting how they made a game that you can breeze through in a weekend, but then it's like, oh, you can keep it fresh, like, you know, you want those power moons. And if I was to play it, I'd be like, where does this get me, like, owning these power moons, and then just, like, saying, I found all the power moons. Like, you don't get the hot chick in the end. There's no amount of money. Nintendo isn't going to prop you up on, like, some, you know, list of achievers that got all 1,000 moons. It's just something extra to do to keep the game fresh. But you figured you probably would earn those moons, or at least most of them, like, on the way through the story mode. That's just the way I look at it, though, but...
Well, some of them don't unlock until after you've beaten it, so, like, Josh tried to get Josh, you can talk about what you did with the moons.
Okay, so, before I went to the moon, which is the last level, I basically tried to get every single power moon that you can get. I forget the exact total that I ended up coming up with, but it was like maybe just below 500, and post-game, like, the maximum amount is somewhere, I mean, the maximum amount that you can collect, not including whichever ones that you can buy in the shops, you can get up to like 850.
Yeah, I think it's something like 866 or something, and then there's like 133 in the shops or something like that.
Yeah,
the maximum. You can buy them for 100 at the shop.
Yeah, the maximum you can get is 999. Like,
yeah.
The last like 130 you can only get from the shops.
And for people who are confused, like, what shops? They don't have that in Mario. Well, now they do. You know, instead of the coins going towards extra lives, which you don't really have lives in this game.
Yeah, there's no lives in this game.
You can die, but it's very rare to actually die in this game. Like, and I went through the whole game up to beating Bowser, and I died, like, maybe 3 times or something.
You only lose, like, what, like 10 coins?
Right, it's almost insignificant. If you die, you lose 10 coins, but... Like, if you fall off of, like, a chasm and die, you will, like, lose 1 health point. But then if you just stand there for 5 seconds or something, you get the health point back. So it's very easy to heal and very hard to die in this game.
Okay, so this has, like, a regenerated health thing. Well, I mean, they did that in Mario 64, too.
That's right, but to do some differences just on how you can get damaged in this game, like in Mario 64, if you fall from really high, I'm pretty sure you lose a health point. I mean, yeah. Or if you're underwater, or if you're underwater, you lose a health point for like holding your breath for a while. But in this game, neither one of those things happens. So like Mario, he still like flattens out a little bit when he lands, like that cartoonish kind of thing he does, where he scrunches up like an accordion kind of. So that still happens, but you don't actually lose health points or anything from. So it's kind of hard to even take damage, let alone die in this game compared with the earlier ones. And even if you do die, it's not significant really, because it puts you right back where you were. It's not like you have to go back to the start of the level. It's like where you were before the last jump is where you get respawn. And so it's, in a way, it almost felt too easy. But at the same time, you have to kind of expect that with a modern game, because they are making them for people who, I mean, I guess the expectations are just different now. Like the amount of difficulty that a child in the 80s would tolerate or expect in a game versus now is just so radically different. If you compare an 8-bit game where they made it really hard on purpose back then, I think, because you have a game for, you know, that they can, if you're really good at it, you can beat it in a few hours back then.
Yeah.
And so they made it really hard to make it so that it lasts longer. And also I think that in general people now have more of like a selfish, like, I want to get through it right away. I want to do it fast. And so they've got a hat. I mean, this is the main gimmick of that game, is that you have a hat that kind of tells you what to do and guides you through the game. And so the hat is always like pointing an arrow towards like where you need to go next. And, like it completely holds your hand through the game.
Oh gosh.
And it's really, I mean, that's why I was able to beat it in a weekend, is because it's like, okay, here's what you need to do next, and then this, and then this, and then this. And so, I mean, there is some exploration you do to get the required amount of moons to power up your ship, because you have to power it up to get to the next level. You have to get a certain amount of moons. And then after you beat the game, there are a few more levels you can unlock by getting more moons. Like, I'm at about 400, but if I get to 500, then it unlocks like another portion of the moon or something, where I can do another boss battle. Like there was, I think, 250 or 300.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the level you unlock it when you get to 500 moons is basically sort of like the final gauntlet. Like I think it was Champion's Road was the level in Super Mario 3D World.
So it's just like a harder world, or is it just like a boss area, or is there like a full like platforming and moon collecting and stuff too?
There's a full platforming thing, but like the final prize is only one multi-moon.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, I'll try to get to that and beyond, but I don't know how long it'll take. And I mean, once you get through the main story, it is kind of hard to maintain interest, because you know, there's not really like a driving force in it, so maybe I should have explored more during the course of the game, but it's kind of hard to do that when the hat is like telling you, go here, do this, do that, and
oh, that'll get annoying.
I kind of just blasted light right through the main part of the game, and there's more exploring that can be done afterwards, because after you beat the last boss, they add these metal cubes on each level, and you have to go hit the cubes. I think they're called moon cubes or moon stones or something, and then they add a bunch of more moons throughout the worlds, and there's like new pipes, and you go down the pipes, and there's like a mini game and a couple of moons in each one of them, and there are these toads that they add throughout the worlds after you beat it that want you to play specific music tracks for them, and Peach is in all the different worlds, and you have to go track her down and talk to her. So they do add a ton of stuff to the post game to keep you interested, and I'll at least give them that. That's something that you definitely didn't get in, you know, earlier games. It was kind of like you finish a game and then you're done. Whereas now it's kind of like the main part of a game is after you beat it at this point. Just to keep people playing it. And it is good that you can play a game for, you know, hundreds of hours or whatever and get your money's worth out of it if you're really into it.
I guess for me, like, if I beat the main story in a game, like, I only want to play a game to know what happens in the main story, but if I beat that, and all that's left is like, hey, have fun doing these little small little tasks, like, I'm not gonna care. Cause then I realize, like, it doesn't lead up to anything. Like, if you add that part of the main story, then I would care, cause then I want to figure out, like, what happens. But when you beat the main story, and you're just going around, essentially grinding, as an RPG term, to, you know, like, find stuff just to, like, feel like a completionist, then, like, that's not the game for me. That's just the way I feel, but, I mean.
I think it kind of depends on what the kind of game is like. If it's something like trying to get all your Pokemon to level 99 or something, I know there are people who do that kind of thing. You know, that's not for me. I've done that, like, once. I have, like, one Pokemon in all the dozens of, I guess not dozens of games, but tons of Pokemon games that I've played. I've only made it to, like, level 99 with one or two Pokemon or something.
Well, the thing is, like, the incentive to getting your Pokemon that high level is when you battle, when you see other people and you battle, you want to have the highest level Pokemon. And you want to be on competitive, and you want to be on that fair plane if they have a higher level Pokemon too. Like, you always want to win because there's a battle, so there's always that winning instinctiveness and that challenge there. Whereas for, you know, this game, it sounds like you're only doing it for yourself, and then it's like kind of like, what do you get out of that? I mean,
people are saying, like, it's an open world Mario game.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's really 100% accurate in that, I don't think most open world games have a hat that's, like, pointing you to where you're supposed to go and telling you what to do, and that you unlock all the levels in a certain order that varies only very slightly. There's, like, two areas where there are branching paths, where you can pick between two next levels to go to.
So is the hat like a nagging girlfriend?
Well, the hat is like everything in this game. It's like the flood in Mario Sunshine.
Oh, I was thinking the flood from Halo, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, you know, there's like the water jetpack on the GameCube Mario game.
I'm aware of the water jetpack. I never played Sunshine, but I'm aware of that game.
But I mean, it's like the whole game revolves around the water jetpack of, like, washing stuff off and stuff and flying around with it.
Okay.
And because you can, like, put some water beneath you and use it to fly around, which is why I called it a jetpack. But anyway. This game is like that, where the central mechanic is based around using the hat to possess enemies, and so Mario can, like, turn into a Goomba or a Bullet Bill.
Okay.
That sort of thing. I actually don't think you can turn into a Koopa, or maybe I haven't done it yet. But
wait, so it works on all those stuff except for Bowser?
Oh, you can use Bowser in, like, the final stage.
Yeah, that's right. You do have to do Bowser.
All right, that actually does sound pretty awesome.
That was one of the only times I died, was, like, after you beat Bowser. I didn't die fighting Bowser, which I was kind of offended by, because it's, like, so hard in Mario 64. But I beat him, and I think all of the bosses without dying once. It's, like, the patterns are so obvious and predictable that it's just... It's just not challenging, which was kind of frustrating to me. And you can unlock harder versions of the boss battles, because they're like paintings in the Mushroom Kingdom that you can jump through and fight the bosses again for more moons, and they, like, shoot out more attacks that are harder to dodge and stuff. And that's good and all, that they do have, like, a more challenging mode. But there's so much of the game that's stuff like that, where it's only after you've done a whole lot of stuff that you can actually experience, like, a slight amount of challenge. I just feel like the main game was too easy and too fast, and I know it is a children's game and all. Like Mario 64 was my first game, so I can't complain like too much. But at the same time, Mario 64 does have some real challenge to it.
Yeah, I mean, Mario 64, it'd be a game that it would take me hours and to get through. Like that game is challenging on its own. Like you can't just breeze through it on a weekend. Like it'll take several weekends depending on like how responsible of an adult you are.
Right.
To sit there and dedicate so much time, yeah.
I've had that game for a long time and I've never gotten all the stars in it and unlocked Yoshi on the rooftop and stuff. Like that to me is like a mythical thing like that I've always known about that was like a key part of, Nintendo lore in the early days. But at the same time, it's not something I've ever actually done. I see that as kind of like an elite achievement. Whereas getting to Yoshi in this game, he's on the rooftop, but all you have to do is beat the game, which is extremely easy. And then you can possess Yoshi with the hat and that's fun and all, but, It doesn't have the same kind of like feeling of achievement of if I ever actually managed to get all the stars in Mario 64 and unlock Yoshi, that would be like something that would be really worth working towards. Whereas if you get all the moons in this, I'm sure there's something that changes. Like I've heard Bowser's dialogue slightly changes or something like that when you fight him. If you want to go back to the last level and fight Bowser again. Like if you get the rarest outfit that you have to spend a whole lot of coins on, and go talk to Bowser, he says, "Oh, your outfit's creeping me out," because it's like a skeleton costume that you can buy for 9,999 coins. But I don't know that it's worth spending that much time and effort to get that outfit just for one line of dialogue that changes.
Well, because you can just find out how that goes on someone's YouTube or, like, Twitch stream account. And you're like, oh, okay, that's how it works. I don't need to put the effort into it.
Right, I'm sure there's, like, a video on YouTube of what Bowser says with each different outfit.
Followed by a tutorial on how to do it, so...
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know, like, you guys were... I think a lot of people were like, oh, man, the Switch is, like, the selling point to get people back into Nintendo. And I don't feel that way at all, to be honest. I mean, I've liked Sony since I got my PS1 back in, like, 2000. And I, like, Sony has the games I really like, so Sony make the best games.
I don't know, it's sort of, like, too early to really say whether the Switch is going to be a success or not.
Yeah.
I think that it launched with Breath of the Wild was good, because Breath of the Wild is legitimately a really big, long game that took me over 6 months to get to where I was able to beat Ganon. So I didn't beat Breath of the Wild in a weekend, to put it mildly. And
see, that sounds like a real game.
Yeah, it is a real game. It's really big, and I'm sure there were a lot of times where I complained that it was too big because I'd get lost in the mountains or something and be stuck there for hours. And I mean, the levels in that, it doesn't have levels. It's just one. It's legitimately an open world game, one big world that you can explore and do in any order. You can fight the dungeons in any order and whatnot, and so that game really is really huge in open world, and I think it kept people's interest in the Switch for a long time. But with Mario Odyssey, I don't know in another month or two if people will still be playing it, or probably there are a lot of people who've already gotten all the moons and moved on to something else. I bet a lot of streamers or whatever are doing Sonic now instead or something within a couple of weeks.
It sounds like a game to get on Black Friday for your kid for Christmas. I mean,
your kid will love it if they haven't played a Mario game before.
Okay.
I mean, it would be like a good first game for a 5-year-old or something. It's about the right level of difficulty, I think. But
think of all the 5-year-olds that played like the original Mario in the 80s. I mean, like, and the, like 5-year-olds were still like owning that game.
It does stand up still, the original Mario. That's for sure. I'm sure that Mario 64 as well. I mean, they released that for the DS when it first came out as a launch title. And, I'm sure a lot of people played it then for the first time and thought it was, and thought it was great. And it's, they put it on Virtual Console and stuff, and I bet it's one of their top sellers. Like on Wii U, they have the, they had Miiverse, which showed up every time you started it up, where it would show like what other people are playing on the Wii U. It would show like artwork that people are drawing and stuff. And that just shut down a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, a lot of the time it would show that people were playing Mario 64 or Ocarina of Time or Majora's Mask. And, you know, there were Mario and Zelda games for the Wii U, but the ones that people keep coming back to are for the older systems. You know, that's still like probably some of the most beloved stuff is like Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Nintendo 64, as far as like games that have made a major impact on people. You know, I don't really see people saying like my first Mario game was Mario 3D World for the Wii U and that really got me into gaming. Maybe there are some really young people that are like that, but you know, I don't know that this game is going to have the same impact on young people that Mario 64 did or anything. I mean, that completely revolutionized the platforming genre, so it's hard to compare like the first real 3D platformer to, you know, after they've had so many years of this kind of game, how do you really be innovative? And I guess they tried to do that with the hat thing, but, you know, when James Rolfe played it, he's like, oh, so this is like Minish Cap, because like Zelda already did this years earlier where they had like the talking hat that has some gimmicks and stuff, and so it's... It's kind of like, okay, they already did this gimmick with Zelda 10 years ago, so it's not 100% original either, and it's just hard to, it's hard to keep reinventing the wheel every year, you know?
Yeah. Josh, what do you got to say?
I mean, I'll just say I really enjoyed Super Mario Odyssey. It's probably my favorite game on the system right now. I mean, it's probably the main selling point for the Switch at the moment, because going down the list of what titles have been released right now, let's say Breath of the Wild was on Wii U, Mario Kart 8 was on Wii U, Splatoon 2, I mean, that's, if you already have the first Splatoon, then you pretty much have Splatoon 2, but Pokken Tournament DX is basically a, you know, port of a Wii U game with like some extra stuff. The only real
relying on people doing like multiplayer and that they have to upgrade to the Switch if they're playing these games competitively or something with Pokemon and Splatoon.
True, because the Splatoon, I mean, basically with Miiverse dead, the Wii U version of Splatoon is kind of dead at this point as well.
Yeah. They freeze out Wii U pretty quick.
I mean, the only real other games other than Mario Odyssey that are exclusives are Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle, which actually I heard was a pretty good game, and ARMS, which is, I mean, that's, if you're up for that, then sure.
So, like, what are some upcoming titles for, like, the Switch that'll, like, maybe you think might get someone, particularly someone like me, interested in the Switch?
Like Bayonetta 3? Well, there might be a Bayonetta 3, but did you like the Metroid Prime series?
Honestly, I have not really played Metroid Prime. I think I picked up a Metroid game for the DS. I don't know if I played it that much, to be honest.
Yes, there's a Metroid Prime 4 coming at some point. I mean, I don't know, like, what games would sell you on the system, but there's, like, there's a Kirby game, a Yoshi game, probably going to be a Donkey Kong game. You know, all the usual titles.
They haven't announced Donkey Kong yet, but it does seem likely, considering they did one for Wii and Wii U that were
basically
trying to be like Donkey Kong Country type of sequels.
Yeah, and Reggie had said in an interview like a month or so ago that they were developing various IP titles for the Switch. Like he said, like Metroid or Donkey Kong, and that's like the first time they've mentioned Donkey Kong for the system.
Okay. I feel like Pikmin 4 was announced already a while back, and they said it was almost done, but then we haven't really heard about it, so I don't know if what they meant by that was just the Pikmin game that came out for 3DS, or if they meant something else that like may come out for Switch as well.
Yeah, the other upcoming game, the game that's coming out next month is Xenoblade Chronicles 2. Let's see what else.
The only thing that kind of got me.
Skyrim HD remastered. There's like a bunch of ads for that on TV now.
Oh yeah. There's also they also ported Doom to the Switch, the new version that came out like last year.
Oh. I mean, honestly, I think like what would probably sell me is like another Knights game, because like when I found out like Journey into Dreams came out for the Wii, like I was like, oh, I gotta own a Wii, like because I want to play Knights, because that's just the Sega fanboy in me, and then I do own it, but I didn't play much of it, to be honest. Like, I think I tried it out, and I was like, I don't know, it just felt so weird playing on it. Like, you know, I'm holding the nunchuck and, like, the other thing, and like, in both hands, and I'm like, how is this supposed to work? I don't know. Like, it's just so weird.
Yeah, I have it too, but I only played it once as well.
Yeah, it just wasn't.
At some point I'll get back to it.
Yeah, I like to finish it up, but, I mean, I'm not sure when, but, I mean, like, if they made one for the Switch, like, I'd be like, okay, if I can just find someone with a Switch and I'll buy my own copy of the game and then just bring it over to their house or something, or I don't know. But, like, it can't just be one game that's going to sell me, though. It's got to be other things. And, I mean, the only thing that really sells me on games is Gundam stuff. So, and, like, they made a bunch of, like, Gundam games for, like, the GameCube and the Wii, but, like, you'd have to do a backwards compatible hack on those systems to get them to work. And I guess, like, if I really wanted to play them, like, I mean, I can play an emulator, like, through, like, one of my Wii consoles, like, to play, like, one of the Gundam games, like, if I really wanted to put the effort into it, but I don't know. I just haven't done it yet.
Yeah, so I think that probably the Switch is going to do well for Nintendo, because in terms of sales, I think it's been more solid than the Wii U was in its early
months. At the moment, the Switch is at about 7.63 million units, which is just within, like, how long has it been? Like, 8 months. And the Wii U, within, like, 5 years, has sold 13.56, so it's already well past halfway there.
Yeah, and, I mean, I think the Wii U was almost like a Sega Saturn level of a screw-up, in that they kind of didn't... I mean, the fact that they spent so long before releasing a Zelda game for it was a big mistake. They just kept releasing, like, HD remasters and stuff. It's sort of like when Sega just didn't ever manage to get out a Sonic game for the Saturn that was really, like, a major main series game. And that, you know, eventually was remedied with Breath of the Wild, but they, because they put so much effort into making Breath of the Wild into the first game for the Switch, what ended up happening was they sort of removed the Sheikah Slate's original functionality as being something that you would look at the gamepad to access, and turned it into where you could tap on the gamepad in order to switch the game from showing on your TV to showing on your gamepad, and then, I guess, carry it around. But the range limitation on the Wii U gamepad is so...
Yeah, and it's
so, like, limited. You can't go very far from the TV.
Yeah, and it's like, if you're going to play the game like that, you might as well just get it for the Switch, which you can just play anywhere. There's no, like, restriction.
Right. The Switch is basically a handheld that you can plug into the TV or if you want to look at it as a console that you can take on the go, or whatever way you want to look at it. But you know, it's actually portable, unlike the gamepad, which it's kind of stupid to put it on the gamepad, and then you can't really go anywhere with that, and the signal is always dropping out, and yeah, telling you you have to get closer to the TV, even if you're only a few feet away from it sometimes.
Yeah, I guess like the Switch, like I can see that as a big hit, like because especially the portability is the fact you have a whole console, like that you can bring on trips, and it has like, you know, two controllers that you can play, you know, with a friend of yours or whatever, like on a car ride. Because like when I was a kid, when I like my brother and I like we did family trips to go to Arkansas, like my dad for one trip took out this like middle padded seat console and the pickup truck that we had, the Chevy truck, in order to get one of those small like CRT TVs back there just to play our Nintendo 64. It was a lot of work just to play a Nintendo console on a 16-hour drive to Arkansas. And now kids have it so easy where they have, like, you know, they buy a console and it's the Switch and you can take that sucker anywhere.
Yeah. And it's all
kind of fun with it. Yeah.
It's not like the battery life is really all that impressive. Certainly if you're going to be on like a 16-hour drive, you're going to run out of battery within just a few hours.
I mean, unless you just hook it up to like the power console or like get one of those, you know, like a wall charger adapter for the cigarette lighter and just keep that sucker hooked up the whole time.
Right. That can be done, I'm sure. But,
yeah.
You know, it's not got the old fashioned batteries. You have to use a specific charger maybe that's, I guess that's, you're never going to have something with old-fashioned batteries, because that was kind of inconvenient when it would just go out and, you know, that playing like an old Game Boy or whatever, you could lose your progress and that sort of thing, and it was a pain, but, you know, I guess the Switch is pretty convenient, and so a lot of people are gonna buy it just for the. It seems like that's what Nintendo has always excelled at, is getting people to buy handheld systems. The 3DS was successful, and you know, the DS was successful. All the Game Boys have been successful, and
yeah.
So I mean, I think that it's gonna be a good thing for them, even though the lineup is not especially strong in terms of third party games or anything like that. But
I mean, it's starting to get there. Cause, I mean, especially because they have all the indie titles that really hit on like a strong surge of indie titles for the system.
What it needs is GoldenEye. Or wait till the next Smash Brothers comes out.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think they've announced Smash Brothers vaguely, but they haven't like said what it's going to be called or anything. It seems like they've run out of names for them, because the last one they just called it Super Smash Brothers, even though there was already a game called that for the Nintendo 64.
Yeah, I was a bit confused by that too. So is this going to be like just they might just call it Smash? And then that's it. But then they're like, is that like Smash TV? Is that like, what kind of Smash? Or is it like Smash Fist or Smash Punch?
Smash in all caps with dots in between it, so it looks like an acronym. But
oh, yeah, yeah, that's how you do it. Or is it like Smash Battle Royale, Smash WrestleMania, Royal Rumble? I don't know. Well, they have to pay WWE for the Royal Rumble title, I'm sure. So, or maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure that they're gonna have a Smash Brothers out soon, and an Animal Crossing out soon, and all the things that Nintendo releases for every system, and they'll probably, each time they do that, they'll get more and more sales on the system and everything. And I think people were saying like a few years ago, Nintendo is dead. They're not going to be around anymore. They're just going to develop things for Sony and Microsoft.
Yeah, they're going to be third party like Sega.
Yeah, people have been saying that for so long, and it's, I mean, that's just against Nintendo's way of doing things.
Yeah.
They would have to be severely desperate and fail at, like, numerous system launches in a row for them to even consider doing something that radical.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're anywhere near that point now or anytime soon. Even though they've started to branch out from just our games on our hardware, they're not, you know, they're not just doing what they used to do, where they would only allow a Mario game to be released on a Mario system. Where they now they've got like Mario, whatever it's called for the phone,
mm-hmm.
Mario Run or whatever it is.
Oh yeah, I'm probably not ever going to touch that. So,
I haven't played it either, but I think it was successful for them. I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And you know they had some weird model on it where it was like you pay $10 to get all the levels past the first three levels, which are free, and it wasn't really all that successful for them because they missed out on the opportunity to have microtransactions in it. They didn't have it where people would be continuing to pay for the game, which is kind of the main appeal of making a cell phone game, is that you're going to get a continuous stream of revenue.
Right.
Not just from people buying the game, but from people paying to win. And I guess Nintendo felt like it would be unfair to do that, and that their games should be based on skill, and I kind of respect that about them. But, you know, from a business perspective, they're sort of old school attitude may not make the most sense. You know, it may make more sense to just exploit the stupidity and impatience of modern gamers who just want to plunk down a bunch of money in order to get all the power-ups right away or whatever, you know. I mean, it's kind of hard to, like, advise them to do something that would screw us as gamers, but at the same time, they are, a business.
Yeah.
And they're going to branch into mobile games. They have to take advantage of the fact that people who buy mobile games are stupid. I mean, fundamentally.
Figure of speech, Lee, but... I mean, I'm guilty of playing mobile games, like, you know, usually, like, if I'm working with my dad this summer, that's when I usually go on there and find something to play, like... So I have something to do, like, if I'm taking a dump at work or whatever.
And, right, I'm not then, saying, like,
as soon as school
like,
starts, like, I delete
not...
all that stuff. Like, and it's mostly, like, free games. So, uh-huh. I mean, I may buy one or two, but then it's like, you know, it's, you're paying a couple bucks here and there. And, you know, it's like, oh, whatever. I may, if I like it, I'll just go back to it and get it later. But then I never do, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, like, begrudging people who play mobile games or anything. It's just, like, that's kind of a scam that a lot of people, I guess, fall into, is buying these games and then buying power-ups in them and stuff. And
yeah.
And I guess it's Nintendo's to be applauded for not doing that. But
And any third-party person like can Pokemon make, Go. Or independent person can make a mobile game and put it on there. And it could be utter crap, but, you know, if he makes people pay or pay to a freemium thing on it, like, you know, you are going to get money out of that. Even if it's, like, the worst game. I mean, like, there's stupid stuff on Steam that, like, you know, it's $2 or $3 or something, and, like, you pay for it, and you're like, oh, you know, all I missed was $3, but then, like, you know, a few thousand people do that, then the person who made the game is making all this money off of it, so...
Yeah. I mean, there's stuff like that Flappy Birds controversy a few years ago, where...
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even know about this game until it got pulled down.
Yeah.
But then everybody started freaking out about it, and there were, like, people selling their cell phones that had the game installed on it for a bunch of money online. And that was weird, because it's kind of like people who wanted to play the game, I think, would have still been able to play the game if they had it installed already. But just the fact that it was removed, I guess, stimulated interest in it.
Yeah.
To people that had
didn't even know it was there in the first place. Yeah,
and then just based on it being like a hot thing that got removed, people started shilling out, you know, massive amounts of money just to get their hands on it, even though you could probably just download it online or something.
Yeah,
I imagine.
Yeah, there's, I mean, there's like game system files of that available online that I was able to find, but I mean, like, I just put it in my gaming folder, my external hard drive, and like, oh, I'll get to this later. But,
did you ever play it? I mean, it looked like it was sort of plagiarized from Mario, like the pipes and stuff.
Maybe a little bit, but I mean.
But I mean, it seemed like it was just one of those games that's like very simple premise of just you tap the button to continue flying and you have to like make it through some holes or something.
Yeah.
But I mean, that just shows like the power of hype around something. Even if somebody's never played something, they're willing to spend hundreds of dollars for a simple mobile game. And so, you know, this Mario Odyssey, the hype around this, I think is probably far greater than anything for Flappy Birds. And yeah, it's actually a full game and everything, even if it's a little too short. And so, you know, people are going to buy the system just for that. And I mean, having a solid launch lineup with Mario and Zelda is critical for Nintendo, and I think that the Christmas sales are going to be really good for the Switch, and maybe this is the start of a comeback for them.
Yeah.
They started to license out stuff where they're making like Nintendo movies now from the people who made the Minions.
All right, start saying something.
Okay, is it recording this
time? Yeah, now it's recording. For some reason, I guess my speakers and my USB headset went out or shorted. I have no idea, but at least the mic part works.
Mm.
So I can just have my mic like hanging off like this so I don't have to have it on my head and still talk, but this is so stupid. Yeah, I have no idea what you guys said like the last minute or so. Like I was just kind of like fiddling with like my model kits or whatever, like as I was listening, and then like all of a sudden like it just stuff just cut out, and I was like, what? I didn't touch anything. I'm like, what did I do? But yeah, I guess just continue on with the conversation since we're recording again, since my freaking computer screwed up in some way.
Okay, well I think we were gonna move over to Josh talking about the new Sonic games.
Okay, nice.
Okay, so new Sonic game, Sonic Forces. So I'll just lay out the story. Eggman gets an edgy new OC character named Infinite, who has these crazy powers with a artifact called the Phantom Ruby and can create illusions and all this shit. And basically, Eggman uses him to conquer the entire planet, or at least 99% of it, and he captures Sonic, and it flashes forward to 6 months later, where your own original OC character can lead the resistance to defeat Eggman, save Sonic, and save the world. It's a weird story, but
So that's how we got to Chris Chan trying to make Sonichu, and then he's upset because it's not accurate enough.
Yeah, because he can't put in like Pikachu tails and all that crap.
They've got like all sorts of other games that you can put skins in for, but I don't think Pokemon was among them.
No, so yeah, you can get there's a costume pack that comes with the bonus edition of the game. It has costume parts involving Knights, Super Monkey Ball, Jet Set Radio, and Persona 5. So, yeah, the OC is like a big part of the game. Like you can customize him, like or her, with a bunch of different like costume parts, colors. You can
Chris thought that the way you had two different eyes was a reference to him, that you could have the eyes be different colors. Like he's the only person on Earth who's got heterochromia.
Mm.
But that's a superpower, right? or something. This piece is not going to work. Whatever. All right, I'll get back to Gunpla stuff later. All right.
Okay, so, I mean, so I'll just say that a lot of people have been bashing on this game, and I think part of that has to do with Sonic Mania having been released like a few months ago. Sonic Mania was probably the best Sonic game since the 90s.
Oh, wow.
It was really good. But a lot of people have been bashing on this one because, like, that game made this one look bad. But honestly, I think Forces is actually a pretty solid Sonic game. It's not the best 3D Sonic game, but it's like I'd put it about on par with Sonic Colors, mm-hmm. which I thought was a really good game. I mean, this I'm hesitant to say is really good. It's got a lot of like linear level designs and a lot of the boost to win type criticisms, but it's got a lot of replayability. Like you can, all the levels are like about maybe like 2 to 4 minutes long, so it's. Yeah, it's just a really fun game, honestly. But yeah, if I was to recommend one of the two games that were released this year for the Sonic series, I would definitely say Sonic Mania. I mean, it's $20 less, and it's a lot more memorable. So
wait, what platform did Sonic Mania come out on?
PC, PS4, Xbox One, okay. And Switch.
Gotcha.
It's the same thing with Forces was on all of those, but the Switch version is the one that seems to be selling the best.
It seems like Mania, the reason it's so popular is because it's, it's what a lot of people hope Sonic 4 was going to be, just completely in the style of the classic Sonic games.
The other thing about Mania is that it was actually made by the fans. I mean,
yeah.
There's like about 3 people who made Mania who originated from like the Sonic Retro fan hacking community. So so the main guy in charge, Christian Whitehead, he did Sonic hacks years back, and then he was hired by Sega to port Sonic 1, 2, and CD over to iOS. And then, because of that, he was able to, pitch his own Sonic game, and then they approved it, and then Sonic Mania is what came out.
It is a nice process. I couldn't really see Nintendo doing something like that without Mario.
No, if this guy had been like a Mario fan, it would have been cease and desisted like ages ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like what they did with the Metroid game,
another Metroid
months
remake?
Back that everybody got mad about.
They
remake Metroid 2 and got cease and desisted.
And then they made their own Metroid 2 remake.
Yeah.
I got that Another Metroid remake game, I guess it was like a beta or something, or maybe it was the full version that's on my computer that I played for a little bit. I thought it was pretty okay or pretty good from what I played. But, I guess that's it for Sonic.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say it's probably like a 7.5 out of 10, maybe 8 out of 10.
Okay.
Not as bad as everybody's saying it is, but yeah.
Crap, I guess I'll just talk about my games that I've been playing. Really just, I mean, like I bought Gundam Versus when it came out, and Gundam Versus is a, if anybody's ever played those, like Gundam versus Gundam games. That was the, there were the arcade ports, or the arcade ones, and then they got ported over to consoles, like usually on like PS3, PS4. It kind of works in that same way, but like this game has like, oh, we have like, a bunch of Gundams unlocked. And that's not entirely true because they have, I think, most series covered except for God Gundam. So there's no G Gundam robots in it, which is kind of disappointing. But I think, like, I mean, they've got DLC suits coming out, and I'm wondering if they're going to start doing DLC for, like, G Gundam stuff.
Is G Gundam not as popular in Japan or something? Or is the US?
I don't know what's going on. I'm hoping there was, like, to a copyright reason that they couldn't add it on there or something. Or maybe they thought, like, oh, well, you know, G Gundam mechs are too powerful, which I think is utter bullcrap because, like, I don't know. It seems like it's a pretty balanced game depending on what suits you get. But, I mean, the fact is, like, you know, people have, like, their suits and they're really good at them regardless if they have, like, you know, super speed with them or, you know, they're very, you know, have a lot of agility, a lot of firepower depending on what, you know, Gundam suit that you get. But yeah, like, let me increase my mic level a little bit. But yeah, like,
I remember seeing an ad for this game on the Gundam Wing Blu-rays that were sent to us by Ritza.
Yeah, they're on.
It's like a five-minute advertisement that's at the start of the second Gundam.
Yeah, that ad is on every single Blu-ray of Gundam Wing. I'm pretty sure it's probably on the Endless Waltz Blu-ray that we got in too.
Probably.
Yeah.
I got Ninja Nonsense in the mail today, by the way.
Oh, nice. I guess mine's coming pretty soon or something this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm on episode, like, 30-something of Gundam Wing. So I'm at the arc where they go back to Earth, and they're trying to protect the Saint Kingdom. So, and
yeah, whenever you finish it, I guess we could do another Right Stuff review and talk about the special features and how you feel about watching Gundam Wing again.
It'll be like a revised Gundam Wing review that, you know, is a whole lot better than that other Gundam Wing review that we did, like, years ago that was like, I'm trying to remember what happened 15 years ago. I think this is what happened. Right. And now that I'm rewatching it, it's just, it's a fun, dumb show. And I stick by that. Yeah, Gundam Versus is like the big game now in the community. And it's got Iron Blooded Orphans mechs in there, so it's because that's the latest series.
Yeah.
It's got a pretty, you know, decent multiplayer version. Like, there's, like, certain areas, like, you have, like, a casual, like, room and, like, an expert room, and if you go into the expert room, you're not gonna stand a chance. Like, especially if you're starting out, like, the people that are in the expert room is like, what do you do with your lives? Oh, I guess you're just all neat, so. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, that's kind of, like, that's one game I've been playing. Another game that I got back into after almost like 15, 16 years is like Final Fantasy, X and X2, the HD remaster that I picked up for the Vita. Man, I mean, I haven't played, you know, Final Fantasy X and, you know, geez, like since 2002, 2003 or something. So it's been about 15 years. I don't remember that game being so hand-holdy. Like, I feel like the most of the game from what I played is just cutscenes. It's you running around for maybe at most 45 minutes to get to a cutscene about like how sad someone is or, you know, why someone acts this way. And it's just so stupid. I was just like, I don't remember this game being having this many cutscenes in it. And then, like, you know, like, I was so excited when it got to battles because at least I felt like I was finally doing something instead of, like, just watching cutscenes and watching people talk about things. And, oh, my gosh. But, like, at the same time, it's like, well, I kind of care about these characters. yeah, so, you know.
Yeah, probably the first time you played it, you were really into it and didn't notice that there were a bunch of cutscenes.
I didn't notice any of that kind of stuff 15 years ago. Like, I guess for me, like, it was like a really good, like, 3D Final Fantasy game, so, like, no one was going to have their complaints on it. And I think now, like, I can see, like, if people still want to hold a candle to it and, like, think it's, you know, good. And, like, you know, with me, like, the parts I can play the game, I'm like, okay, this is actually pretty fun. And I guess I kind of like that it's hand-holdy because then I don't feel like it's so grindy. Because, like, a lot of these Final Fantasy games, you have to play, like, 20 hours of grinding just to get to the next part, whereas this one, like, you kind of level up along with the game, as long as you know what you're doing. So, like, for me, it's like, okay, it's easy for me. And I like that because then I don't have to put, like, so much effort just to play a Final Fantasy game.
Yeah, I mean, some JRPGs can be too excessive on... the amount of training that they require.
Yeah, I mean, like, the only game that's kind of like that would be, compared to it, would be, like, when I played the Magic Knight Ray Earth game for the Sega Saturn. Like, that one, like, you leveled along correctly, like you're supposed to move along with the story for that game, and that actually worked. So with Final Fantasy X, it kind of does feel like that. And for me, I was just like, oh, I feel like I'm, you know, 15, 16 again, just, you know, lounging around on a weekend, playing Final Fantasy, not really caring about anything or not having any kind of responsibilities, except to, like, level up characters and, like, you know, go through this grid chart to get abilities unlocked or whatever. And then it's a portable, so I can just take it to the bathroom and, you know, take a dump while I'm, you know, going through story and dialogue cutscenes, or maybe battling, who knows.
There's such a crazy amount of, like, remakes of all the Final Fantasy games for handheld and systems, and, you know, it seems like they've gotten so obsessed with spin-offs and remakes and stuff at Square Enix that it's really rare that they actually release, like, a new system, I mean, a new series game for that or for Kingdom Hearts that they'll spend, like, 10 years between installments just doing... just like the remakes and remasters of the old games over and over.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like this year marks the 30th anniversary of Final Fantasy, and Square was supposed to release some sort of big collection set to have, like, a bunch of Final Fantasy games, like, in one collection for the PS4. I don't know of any word about, like, that release date or anything like that. It's just supposed to come out the end of this year, which means it's probably going to come out sometime next year, if it happens. I don't know.
Yeah, that's possible.
And then again, I'd be rebuying these same games that I could already, like, already have on, like, PlayStation 1 and, like, cause I own, like, 4, 5, and 6 on PS1 already through the, Final Fantasy Chronicles and Anthology collection. I believe it's Chronicles and Anthology, and then there's another one. Oh, Origins has 1 and 2, that's it. I don't believe I have Origins, but, yeah, it's like I'm just rebuying the same stuff again. Because I don't feel like digging through storage to get that stuff out.
Yeah, I have a lot of the Final Fantasies for PS1 and PS2 that I still haven't gotten to. I kind of played through the first couple of them, and then, I never really got around to
it's
making
amazing.
It very far in the later ones.
It's amazing for me that, like, I pick up a Final Fantasy game, like, okay, this is the Final Fantasy game I'm going to beat. And I can finally say I finally beat a Final Fantasy game, and then I never get to it. I said that with, like, 10. I said that with 12. I said that with 13. I don't even know if I'm ever going to touch 15. And, like, I left out 11 and 14 because of those are the online exclusive ones that I don't want to pay $15 a month to play it. I mean, I think the Final Fantasy 11 servers are probably just open by fans if they don't even exist anymore. And 14 is just what it is now. I have no idea, like, how to do any of that stuff. I don't have time to invest in that.
Yeah, I don't...
Salut!
I don't know either. I've never played any of the online ones. But it is weird when you have a game like that... I mean, at some point, that game is just not going to be playable anymore, you know?
Yeah.
So it kind of sucks that they chose to release them through that route, but I guess it also gave them, you know, a big source of revenue for Square Enix for a lot of years.
Yeah, I mean, I had a copy of 11 for Xbox 360 and some of these expansions, and I never bothered to, like, open or try them. So then I just wind up selling them at Animazement one year, and I made about, like, $40 off of them, I think. I was like, well, guy, have good luck trying to... I guess there's still servers open for it. I have no idea. That's your problem now.
I mean, there are people who still do servers for Phantasy Star Online.
Yes, the Dream. Yeah, I heard. Last I heard, like, and this was years ago, and it probably still exists. That there's, like, you know, open or fan servers open for the Dreamcast Phantasy Star Online games, because that's how dedicated these people are.
And I don't know how that really works. I mean, back in the day, they wanted, like, money to do the online subscription model or something, right?
Yeah, so I have no idea either.
How do you privately operate a server if the game is set up to only connect to you know, the official Sega server. I guess you have
probably,
to modify it.
I'm something. Pretty sure they found a way to, like, trick, like, you can set up a server, but then trick it to look like a Sega server so it can connect to it. I mean, that'd be the best guess I can get. And, you know, these are people that, like, are web developing wizards that can figure this stuff out just to play Final Fantasy Star Online. It's crazy, yeah. But, take a look at my shelf here real quick. I mean, really nothing much. I mean, like, honestly, like, the only games, like, I will play on, oh, well, okay. Windjammers, is a game that came out through the, PSN market. And I believe Limited Run, my friend's company, is going to be releasing a physical copy of that sometime soon. Like, that was a game I picked up when I found out that it was released. And, like, I've only played, like, a little bit of it, though. But then I had to get it for my Vita, which in order to get it for my Vita, I had to, upgrade the firmware, which means it, disengaged this, this mod that I had on there to use my Vita as a PSP mod. Cause that was like my way of playing Initial D without using my PSP, which would have worked anyways if I just charge up the stupid PSP anyways. But I was like, oh, you know, one device I can play like Vita games and I can play like, you know, my, you know, PSP games on here and it'd be great. And then it was like Windjammers and it was like not connecting to my stuff because it knew the firmware and I couldn't trick it. I was like, ah, crap. So then I was like, well, whatever. With Windjammers, it's totally worth it. So I'll just wait till Hinkaku upgrades its hacking stuff to cover version like 3.65 or whatever. And then I'll just try it like installing the stuff again so I can use it as a PSP emulator. that's kind of like one part I was using the Vita for. And like, it took me like a couple of nights to like thoroughly like modify it so I can actually get the thing to work. But anyways, I'll just have to redo that again, but I'm ain't worried about it. Cause my Vita has been sitting on the corner of my, bed table for like over a month collecting dust cause I just haven't gotten to it. Cause that's how bad I am with games. gosh. Yeah, I'm just thinking, I mean, in terms of Steam, since I got my library open, I mean, I picked up like, Day of Infamy, which is just a World War II first-person shooter. And by the way, I'm gonna pick up more, I'm more than likely 98% chance that I'm gonna pick up Call of Duty World War II on Black Friday for $43. And when I say I'm gonna pick it up for $43, it's me buying the game to play the campaign mode. Cause I'm probably really not gonna touch that multiplayer. And I probably will touch the multiplayer, cause why the heck not? Because then I can make my busty blonde Nazi chick customized online character, because that seems totally worth it for me.
Isn't this a game where people are saying, like, it lets you play as a black female
Nazi
member,
yes,
of the Nazis or something?
Yeah, I might as well make a character like that, too, because why the heck not? And get, like, a big old, like, afro on her and everything. That just sounds so beautiful to me. Let's see, I got Sniper Elite 4, which is a game that every mission takes over 2 hours to beat, because it's constantly sneaking and sniping and getting into stupid firefights that you don't want to, so I gotta finish that game up. Let's see, oh, I picked up My Summer Car, aka the game that I ran into that driver and killed him, if you guys remember the video.
That was the one you were turning on for monetization in one of our previous episodes.
Oh, that's right? True. Yeah, I think that was it. But yeah, like, I played a little bit of My Summer Car. I haven't gotten back to that yet because I've been so busy. I did pick up Friday the 13th, the game, on near Halloween when they had a sale for that. I haven't been able to play Jason. Jason's kind of like on this random roulette thing if you ever get him. But yeah, like, Friday the 13th is basically, like, you surviving, like, one person's Jason, so it's like a cat and mouse game. Or, we're basically, like, if you're Council, you have to hide and do objectives in order to get away from Jason. Whereas if you're Jason, it's easy, you just gotta kill all the counselors. So, and I think like if I think it's a winning scenario if like one counselor escapes from the Camp Crystal Lake or something.
I saw the video James and Mike did on that game, and they had some like explained how you can win it, and it's like really specific. You have to be really lucky, and like you have to get one of your characters is Tommy, and one of them is his mother, and like there's a bunch of like really specific stuff you have to do in order to defeat him. So that mainly you would just run away.
Yeah, I mean with Tommy, like you have to unlock him. Basically, you have to call like a ranger or something. Like there's an option to get a hold of a phone, which means you have to turn the power on. And then, like you have, if you have a character that's deceased or was able to get away in time, they can return as Tommy to try to take out Jason. I mean, I don't think there's any way to kill Jason in this game other than like you just impale him and then run for your life and hopefully he doesn't know how to can't figure out where you're at. But there's a whole lot of advantages. Like if Jason figures out where you're at, he can actually just teleport over there. Like it's crazy. I mean, like I only played a little bit of that, and that's kind of about it in terms of my Steam list on video games. Nothing really that exciting for me. Josh needs to head out. Yeah.
Okay, we can move over to closing remarks if you want.
Yeah, I mean, this is enough content for a gaming podcast for sure. So, like, if Josh needs to take off, he can. Because I got to get to bed, and because I got school in the morning too. So
we could always tie the closing remarks segment into video games too, because. For Christian News, he had been posting over the last 2 weeks about this game called Neptunia that he seems to have gotten
hyperdimensional Neptunia, which means he's in some sort of reality that the reality he created is apparently affecting everyone in the state of Virginia with his in-game waifus. That's my interpretation of the story. How do you guys see this? Because I'm having trouble understanding it.
He seemed to like think he was possessed by some character from this video game for a while.
Well, it was like a week, and then he's just like, "Oh, I'm not possessed by them anymore. Here's my explanation. Make sense of it if you can."
Yeah, I don't know if that was all of the stuff that was like plagiarized from the game, or if he came up with some original scenario where he found some way to combine it with his
Chris Chan coming up with something original. That's great.
Yeah. I'm sure there's like 5% original, which is like the part where he added in the Autobots or something, but that's just plagiarized from Transformers instead.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I can't imagine the amount of like, if you were to make a good estimate on like how much Chris could get sued for by Hasbro, by Sega, by the Pokemon Company, it's just, like, there's no way he would be able to ever pay it, and so then it's like no point of anyone pursuing legal trouble against him.
Right, I mean, who's gonna sue some, like, autistic guy who doesn't know what he's doing wrong? I mean, everyone has told him over and over that that he can never make a Sonic Shoe game, but, like, in his mind, that's never gonna sink in, and he's always gonna think that he actually, I mean, the state of Virginia gave him the copyright to the character of Sonic Chu, and so that kind of went to his head, and he thinks, like, he really does own Sonic Chu, and it really is legitimate, even though it is just a blatant, you know, theft of another two companies' intellectual properties.
I was aware that the copyright was a federal thing instead of a state thing.
Well, I thought he did it with the state, but I don't know, but it's kind of like, I guess the judge doesn't know any better to recognize Sonic and Pikachu and realize that this is like a derivative of them, or they see it as harmless.
If he ever gets taken to court, like if that case moves up to the Supreme Court system on a federal level, like you can bet your biscuits like that Chris Chan will go down hard on that, so.
Well, like, I think about Chris and just humors him. There's like a video where that some Sega employees are kind of like they have a supersonic plush, and one of them like points at it and says, "Hey, it's Sancho," and laughs or something, like on the Sega YouTube page. And then there's like numerous references in
Sonic Boom
yeah. cartoon that to like a there's like a Chris Chan parody character that's like complaining about Sonic's arms being blue, and is like Sonic's number one fan and yeah. has a similar shirt to Chris and everything.
That is such a hard episode to watch too. That's the only episode of Sonic Boom I've seen, and even I was like, "Oh, that's hard to take."
There's definitely a lot of poking fun at the fan base in the second season of Sonic Boom, and they very much deserve it.
I mean, did they have an episode where like some guy with a hammer is going up to a store called Lulu's and beating, like, or going to a comic book store and beating up a Sonic shoe? Character or whatever, like, or protesting in front of a Lulu's building, aka the Lulu's in, near NC State.
Yeah, he really made himself infamous by all that blue arm stuff, even more than he already was. And
yeah,
it's kind of like that. That must have tipped Sega off if they didn't already know about him. The fact that he kept sending letters to them, threatening them, like he sent some like death threats to the CEO of Sega over the blue arms.
Yeah,
and threatening to like blow up the Sega building and stuff. And I guess they just figure like, oh, it's just another autistic Sonic fan. We'll toss that in the trash with all the others.
Oh man.
Because they probably get that every day.
I don't
think... angry Sonic fan saying, "You need to change it back to the way it was in Sonic 1 and Banana Nose Hentai Quills."
Okay, but, like, the thing is, like, I guess, like, Chris is the worst offender, and then you got Mario the Plumber, but, like, where's that guy been? Like, he hasn't been... he hasn't shown up anywhere. I think he's done because he wanted to get... recognition on Encyclopedia Dramatica, and then he realized he got it, and it totally backfired on his plan. So then he was just like, "Well, I guess I'm just gonna, you know, stay quiet or whatever." And then maybe he's got to work like 5 full time jobs to pay off all the Rosalina figures he bought on credit cards. I don't know.
Josh, does he still make videos or stream?
I think the last time he was making videos was he made a few Breath of the Wild videos earlier this year. I don't think he's made anything since.
I was hoping he had a rant about Sonic Forces.
Oh, man.
But yeah, he probably spent too much money on Rosalina Amiibos to be able to afford it.
What an idiot.
Wait a minute. No, he did post a, well, he posted a video titled Sonic Forces Full Game Review, but it was like 2 months ago, so he was probably just reviewing it before the game even came out. I think same thing with Sonic Boom.
He just says it sucks based on the trailer or something, or the art.
Probably.
Yeah.
This game looks like hentai quill up my ass.
He thinks all that matters is the character design, so the instant they show it and it doesn't have, like, black-eyed Sonic or the wrong shade of blue on his quills or whatever, that's gonna infuriate him.
Oh, man.
Alright, I should probably head off.
Alright. I mean, I think we're about...
Later.
I mean... Later. Yeah, I think we're about finished up here anyways. But, like, in terms of closing remarks, today marks the death of 2 celebrities. Marilyn Manson and then that big girl, black girl from Touched by an Angel. I mean, I'm sorry, Charles Manson, my bad.
Yeah, I was going to say, what, Marilyn Manson died too?
Aha, Steve was going to see if I can catch you on, catch you off your guard. Oh. Yeah, I guess it was bound to happen that Charles Manson would pass away at some point in his life. And this is a guy that, like, did not, like, he knew he had to stay in prison. And he was like, yeah, every time he had a parole, he's just like, huh, I'm not leaving. He'll just come up with, like, some really insane stuff to say just to make sure he doesn't get parole.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably, if it was anybody else, maybe he would have gotten out, but he did stuff continually while he was in prison that made it where that was obviously never going to happen.
I pulled up the Newsweek article, title, Marilyn Manson mourned on Twitter, confusing him for Ted Ness murderer Charles.
Yeah.
What a headline. Oh, man. Now I got this music playing. Oh, I didn't realize Charles Manson was dead at 83. It's got that piano music because the ad just started freaking playing, so...
Yeah, I had to close it because it started playing music.
Alright, well... I'm just going to ahead and mute it. This is some good stuff. Stupid Newsweek, you don't need to show me anything. Twitter from Funky Joe says, RIP Marilyn Manson. So sad to see such a talent go to waste. These are some dumb mother effers. Yeah, the image for Marilyn Manson is him with some sort of kitchen knife taped to a microphone. What the hell? Anyways, but that's kind of expected. So, yeah, and then there's also, I said the girl's name in the chat instead of just the black woman from freaking, oh, Touched by an Angel. Where the heck did I put that? Oh, Della Reese, that's her name. And then it instantly reminded me of George Carlin on Touched by an Atheist from Mad TV. I was like the only skit I could think of.
It seems like they usually go in threes, so maybe Marilyn Manson will be next, but... Who knows?
Oh man, a lot of people have called it early for Marilyn Manson. Who knows? We'll probably find out before Thanksgiving. So, I mean, at least at this, like a person that died was someone that like people are expecting to die for like the past 50 years since he's been in prison. So, I mean,
yeah.
A good thing came out of it today. You can give it that.
I mean, it's not like some great tragedy or anything that this happened.
No, yeah. I mean, this is the first time that someone died. It's like, all right, there is a God.
Yeah, nobody is really mourning this.
I mean, except for his, like, diehard followers, but...
They still exist. I guess there must be some Manson cultists still out there, but...
Well, there's still his family, like, still locked up in prison, that whenever they get a parole hearing, like, the family members of the victims are like... No, keep their asses locked up. Like they are not going to get out. So they're bound to rot in prison for the rest of their life.
There was like that Manson family member that they let out in the 70s, and then they tried to kill Gerald Ford. So I mean, they don't really behave or anything. They don't reform in prison or anything because they're so crazy.
Yeah. I mean, other than, I guess, is there anything in the world of politics other than like Roy Moore is screwed? And in my, I told you about like the, what was it, media law class last week where, my teacher brought up like the, giant law document, like to try to like, you know, for him to like, oh, we're going to sue like these news companies for libel. And there's so many grammatical mistakes in there. And then after class, I showed my teacher what you sent me on Twitter. He's just like, I want a copy of that. And it's like, yeah, I can email you the Twitter link. Like, yeah, someone like dissected that letter so hard. And I'm like, there's no way Roy Moore could possibly, well, actually, he probably can possibly win Alabama for whatever position he's in.
Yeah, I don't know. It seemed like he was in a position to win before all these scandals hit. And then now it's gonna be pretty hard for him, but it doesn't seem like he's gonna drop out of the race or anything, and
yeah,
let somebody else take his place. I guess the thinking in his world is that the same thing happened with Trump, where everybody said, "Oh, this Trump sex scandal is the end of him. He's going to be defeated by Clinton in a landslide," and then he beat her by 75 electoral votes and won all the swing states and everything.
I think Roy Moore is counting his chickens way before they're never going to hatch.
Yeah,
he's not Donald Trump though. He doesn't like. No one knew who he was. Unless you lived in Alabama and knew who this guy was. But outside of that, like, no one knew who he was except for this. And
yeah, I mean, he was pulling ahead because he was the Republican in Alabama. Everybody assumed he was going to win. Even though he had done all these things before that outraged people, like refusing to give out the gay marriage licenses and putting up the Ten Commandments in his courthouse. And so he had kind of made a bit of a national name for himself from doing that kind of stuff as a stunt. But you know, even though he was probably going to win before these scandals came out, I mean, I think that there's a big difference between these scandals and the Trump scandals. People would still vote for Trump because Trump, as gross as the stuff he was saying was, it was, you know, he was saying, like, the adult women let him do it. And whereas this is a case of, like, this guy is, like, preying on children and stuff. So it's,
yeah.
I think people are going to regard it differently as, you know, not just a skeezy guy, but, like, some sort of pedophile. But at the same time, there's also the fact that these things happened 40 years ago. So, you know, Alabama is a conservative Christian state, so a lot of people there are going to say, like, we believe in forgiveness, and if he's turned over a new leaf and been faithful to his wife for 4 years.
Well, I mean, there's also, like, however long the statute of limitations can cover some of this stuff, which it may or may not, so.
Yeah, it may be that this stuff is no longer prosecutable. And even if, I mean, that's almost becoming obsolete because you can have your life ruined just from an allegation. And yeah. Like a trial is kind of superfluous in 2017 because everybody is so prejudiced that they
come
to conclusions based on just what they read online rather than actually like the evidence of it, that a trial would require, which is much stronger than a social media trial.
Well, I mean, now that's the newest victim in this, or I guess the newest person to have victims is Charlie Rose from CBS News, and before that was the one I can think of was like Louis C.K. I think maybe on the last recording I said this where it was like, you know, it's good that this stuff is coming out, but then it's kind of like there still needs to be some sort of evidence behind it instead of just, you know, these allegations, but then you kind of like have to take the person's word on it and, you know, I guess like if it's an act or not. And
And in some of these cases, like Louis C.K., I mean, I haven't really looked that much into the details, but it seems like in a lot of the cases, it's not even alleged that they were doing anything forceful or anything, and it was just, like, they're into weird stuff, or, like, they invited women into their hotel room at night or something. And so it's kind of like, I don't care, that's their private life. Why do we have to make everything into a national scandal when it's like some comedian's sex life? Like, who cares about that? Why does that have to be on the news every day?
Yeah.
When it's so disgusting and depraved and it's just their own personal behavior that doesn't impact anybody outside of them and a very small circle of people around them. The sort of disgusting nature of the media and the sick stuff they'll just focus on. It's so unimportant and lurid that they'll go for anything for the sake of ratings. And, you know, I really pity anybody who's trying to raise a child in 2017. I mean, it's just such a, like, TV and the internet is such a complete cesspool now that it must be impossible to keep a child away from just how demented our society has become. But, I mean, they try to force, like, all kinds of stuff down children's throats now that
Yeah, and then you're gonna
like the stuff about like giving hormones to like 5-year-olds and that sort of thing that they've started to do and pushing like transgenderism in kindergartens and stuff.
Oh my gosh.
It's really out of control, the degree to which like even childhood has become heavily perverted and politicized by our sort of messed up modern culture.
I gotta wonder, where's the sexual allegations against women where the men are the victims? When are those gonna come out? Because it wouldn't surprise me. It actually wouldn't surprise me. I know it exists, but no one wants to talk about that because men are the real evil, not the women.
Well, yeah, that wouldn't be considered to be like
politically correct or pro-feminist.
It's not from the right group of people that's being.
I'm giving another side to this. That's all I'm saying. So,
yeah, it does seem like it's never going to end. You know, there's one every day now.
Just about
somebody being accused of something, and you know, there was the Al Franken thing where he groped some woman that was in bondage.
Yeah, AKA Al Frankenstein.
Yeah, that's what the whole
Trumpism. Yeah, I mean, I look at the photo and it was kind of like, I mean, it was supposed to be a joke, and yeah, you can say it's not funny, but I was like, there's a lot of armor between him and her boobs. I mean, I thought the sexual harassment was like when there's like basically, you know, flesh to flesh contact or like, but like with body armor, I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I the gesture is inappropriate, sure, but like in terms of like the touching, like I'm like, there's body armor there. Like if it can stop a bullet, it'll stop your hand, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, in a way, it's sort of just a question of if people, you know, if you're going to have the military be fully integrated, isn't stuff like this kind of going to be inevitable just based on, you know, men and women being what they are, that this sort of stuff is going to happen? I mean, it's not like Al Franken is the first guy to grab a woman, I'm sure, in the military.
And he won't be the last.
I mean, he was just there. He did like a skit or something supposedly with her that he thought she wasn't enthusiastic enough about being kissed by him in the course of the skit or something.
You know what? That reminds me of that video. What was it? I don't even know if it's still on YouTube anymore. Where like Rudy Giuliani dressed up as a woman and then Trump gropes him. Yeah. Do you remember that? Yeah.
I do remember that.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, so is Giuliani going to press like sexual harassment charges on Trump dressed in drag? Like, come on.
Yeah. I don't know what the origin of that clip is.
That was clearly a skit.
When Giuliani was running for president on The Daily Show and just being like disgusted and shocked by it. But at the same time, I was kind of like, okay, I guess they're in New York. That's what people do in New York.
That's what the rich do. Yeah. Like, that's whatever. That's their life.
Yeah.
Anyways, I guess we can. You got anything more to say for closing remarks?
No, I guess we're at almost 2 hours, which is fine.
Yeah, I'll just go ahead and export this MP3 so I can work on it this weekend, or not this weekend. Excuse me, by Thursday, so we have a Thanksgiving Day special.
Did we mention that Mason got foreclosed on and they sold his house for $35,000?
Wait, did he already... his house sold for $35,000?
Yeah, but it's a whole month ago now and he's still living in it, so...
Well, his thing was that he's just going to stay there until they, like, legally have to kick him out, which... I mean, who knows when that is, but if the state bought his house, like, it's going to be on the market soon, so then whoever's going to buy it in the state auction, like, he has to be out of there by then. That's the way that's how I understand it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's probably going to keep appealing or trying to.
Well, that's all he can do.
Prevent them from kicking him out, I think he said in October, like he thought he'd be out by the end of the month. But now we're most of the way through November, and he's still there. So
yeah.
You know, there have been so many times when the city was about to become homeless and didn't, so maybe he'll be able to continue hanging on in there, but I don't see Tomb Raider coming back anytime soon.
I don't know if it's ever going to come back, so.
Yeah, probably not.
I'm just waiting for the Koreans to take it over again and put another Ocean Paradise 2012 or whatever up there. That looked like a pretty good game.
Maybe game. Kim Jong-un's going to buy it up and put some threats on there towards Trump.
I mean, imagine, like, Tune Radio being, like, the website owned by the North Koreans to play, like, a bunch of Korean cartoon theme songs on it, and then, like, have that as a mixture along with, like, the national anthems they have to listen to every single day in North Korea.
They'll have, like, the Yeongyeori theme song and, the Pulgasari, that's what it's called.
Yeah, the Pulgasari. I guess Pulgasari had a soundtrack, I wouldn't know. Oh, man. The greatest thing our nation ever made was Pulgasari.
The only thing.
The only thing. Alright. I'll go ahead and end the call then, and we'll hang this up. So, happy Thanksgiving to our listeners who stuck it around and heard us talk about video games, and basically it was a Nintendo promotional episode, in a sense. But yeah, happy Thanksgiving to you guys. See you for the next episode, whatever that might be.
See you later.
Later.